Hello, and welcome back to On Alliance. Today we are speaking with Shlomo Ashkenazi. Shlomo, a licensed clinical social worker, has been recognized as a leader in the LGBTQ+ rights movement for more than 40 years. He was a founding member of the National Lesbian and Gay Task Force. The first openly gay MSW student in the country, he became a founder of the Hedrick Martin Institute. As its first clinical director, he created the Harvey Milk School, a high school serving LGBT youth, and served as its first principal. Since becoming a Baal Tshuva, or a returnee to Judaism in 1979, he's worked to help Orthodox LGBT people reconcile their religious identities with their sexual orientation, and has also been active in educating the Orthodox community about this issue. He's been running a monthly support group for Orthodox gay men since 1983. He also is the chair of the board of Eshel. Hi, Shlomo. Thank you for being with me today.
Hi, Sarah.
So please tell me a little bit about you and about your ally story that you'd like to share with us today.
Well, I've had so many allies in my life. I didn't get to where I am without having people support me and help me. But there's one ally story that stands head and shoulders above every other one, and it came when I really needed it. And it was so special. All the way back in 1985, I had only been Baal Tshuva for 5 years. I joined a new shul, Young Israel of Fifth Avenue. And because I've always been out in the non-Jewish and non-frim world, it was important to me to find people there that I could be myself with. And my instincts are very good, and I chose wisely. And I did have some friends there, you know, couples, children who were open to accepting me for who I am. I did a very public thing. I was on a television show, the Phil Donahue show, talking about the work that I did because I was the principal of the Harvey Milk High School, which is a gay high school. And so word got out. A lot of people found out. And so the rabbi called me to speak with me one day and told me that there was such an uproar in the shul that he did not want me to come to shul anymore, said that I was unwelcome there. And I didn't think I had a choice. I told him, okay. I said, I won't come anymore if you don't want me there. It was very upsetting. You know, I considered that my shul, my community. And so for the next 3 Shabbosim, I did not go to shul. But then after 3 weeks, I received a call from the vice president of the shul, who was one of the friends who now I know to use the word ally. We didn't use that then. And this friend called me and asked me if I'm all right and said, we haven't seen you for a few weeks. Are you okay? And I told him that, yes, I was okay. But I told him the story of how the rabbi told me that I was not welcome to come there anymore. And he was horrified. He was so upset. He said that the rabbi had no right to say that in the name of the shul and that I must come back. And I felt torn, but I told him, well, I already told the rabbi that I would not come back. And so this friend told me that until I came back, he would not step foot in that shul until I did. And then I had a dilemma on my hands. I didn't want to cause an uproar. I didn't know what to do. So I sought the help of some other rabbis who I was out to who were supportive of me. One of them was Rabbi Singer from the Bialystoker Shul on the Lower East Side. And the other one was Rabbi Riskin, who at that time was at Lincoln Square Synagogue. And both of them told me that they thought that the rabbi was very wrong to have said that and told me that, especially based on this new information that the vice president of the shul wouldn't go there. And then I heard from him, that vice president, the next day to say that 2 other people who were allies would not go to shul until I came back. So I called the rabbi of the shul and I told him what had transpired over the last few days and why I decided that I could not keep my promise to him of not coming back and that I would be in shul that Shabbat. And so I returned to Shul at Shabbos, and there were several people who were very happy to see me. However, for the next 14 years, I did not get an aliyah in that shul. As far as not getting an aliyah, It became a joke after a while. And to tell you the truth, I became so comfortable with it. I think it improved my davening because I never had a worry that I was going to be interrupted. I'll tell you the story of when that ended. And I said, I don't know what conversations were held behind closed doors. Obviously, there were some, because one day after this 14-year period, the gabbai, who I'm pretty sure was one of my main detractors, pretty sure that the main gabbai of the shul was very anti-gay. I heard him say things, not to me, overheard. I heard him once say that people who get AIDS deserved it. So one day they were up to, the Shlishi Aliyah, and the gabbai was just in, walking around in my section looking around and said, who hasn't had an Aliyah for a while? Which he sometimes did. And then he looked at me and he said, Shlomo, have you had an Aliyah recently? And I thought he was taunting me. I gave him a look like, really?
Yeah.
I said, Shlomo, have you had an Aliyah recently? Come on up. Shlishi, Shlomo, the laser, Shlishi. And I was stunned. I got up and I had an Aliyah. And then after I had the Aliyah, how people shake hands and, give you a shakoa. Well, it was a fairly large shul with a lot of people there. And people from the back rows and the other side of the shul who I would not have passed by got out of their seats and came around.
Aww.
And it was like a wedding reception. It totally disrupted the Torah reading because a long line of people came to give me a Yasha Koach before I could get back to my seat. Oh. Isn't that beautiful?
It was like, wow.
And the plague had ended. I don't know why or what, but after 14 years, I got Aliyah. And when I did, it was a huge event and lots of people acknowledged it.
What changed after all that time? And there was no we've made a decision or, there's a new policy or anything like that. It was just
whatever was said, whatever decisions were made, they weren't shared with me. And I was fine with that. Because I felt comfortable there, because I did have some friends there, and that became my shul, I knew other people in my area who, some that were formerly from Ish or from Curious, and I urged people, but wouldn't go to shul because they didn't know if they feel comfortable in a shul. And I would tell them, I go to this shul and come meet me on Shabbos and then you can come back to my place for lunch afterward. And over the years, at one point we had more than a minion of just gay men. That might have been part of what changed the...
Right.
And some of those men were deeply closeted outside of our clique, didn't want anyone else to know other than within the inner clique of gay men in the shul. As I did, came out to selected people who they felt were safe or who I informed them were safe to come out to. I was the only one who did not get an Aliyah. Everyone else did, but I suppose because of that very public act that I did. But within a fairly short time, gay men became a very important part of operation of that shul. One of the gabbais was gay. The head of the education committee was gay. The editor of the shul newsletter was gay. There were gay men who became extremely involved in the treasurer of the shul was gay. I brought in a lot of new members to the shul and they were all gay men. And so by staying there, I did change the culture of the shul. And so my message to people who go to a shul and feel that they don't belong there, be the pioneer, be the one who changes it. Don't go and say, it's not welcoming or I don't belong here. Find what you like about it, make some friends there. And there are, and something that I have found over the years, no community is monolithic. Every community has its most extreme side and its most liberal side. And that's where change begins. It begins from the bottom up. Those people who can have to stand up and say, I'm here. And I recognize that not everybody can stand up. But one thing I tell people, And not everybody has the same degree of jeopardy in coming out. Some people could lose their job. Some people can get thrown out of their homes. Some people just still too emotionally unstable about where they're at, that they could not take that onslaught of pressure. So everybody's level of jeopardy is not the same. So those people who can come out should come out. And those people who can't need to be protected. In a support group last year, an older man who I know who lives a very compartmentalized life, he has gay friends and he has a gay life, but he's very active in the Orthodox world and totally, totally closeted in that world. And he didn't get it. And he said, what would be the benefit of my coming out? You know, what would be the benefit of my coming out? And I responded to him and I said, well, maybe it doesn't change your life. But what about that young kid in your shul who's sitting two rows in front of you and he comes on Shabbos and he looks this way, he looks that way, he looks around and he says, I'm the only one like me here. I don't belong here. And because he doesn't see anybody like himself in that shul, he goes off the derech. He stops coming to shul. Or worse comes to worse, he kills himself. How complicit are you in that decision of his? Because you are there. You're hiding has affected what happens to him. And he got it. He said, you're right. That makes sense. He didn't come out, but he understood that not being visible has its consequences. So yes, we have to be our own allies too. The best final piece of this particular story is that just 4 years ago at the Asheel annual retreat, I was telling this story in a workshop that I was facilitating. And at the end, a young woman, 21 years old, asked me if the name of that shul was, because I didn't give it in the talk, she asked me if it was Young Israel at Fifth Avenue. And I said, yes. And she said, that was my father. And she asked me his name. She asked me, was that, and gave me her father's name. And said, was that who this was? And I said, yes. And she said, that's my father. I said, I've been afraid to come out to him. He doesn't know that I'm a lesbian, but I can't wait to go home now and come out to my parents. That's my favorite ally story.
Thank you, Shlomo.
Okay, thanks for listening to my stories.
I am so blessed to have had this time with you. Thank you. It's great. Just beautiful, fabulous.
Many young LGBTQ people growing up in Orthodox environments feel that they have no choice but to leave the firm community. While Eshel is supportive of everyone choosing for themselves, there is a growing number of our members who would like to belong to an Orthodox kehila. Shlomo Ashkenazi's poignant story points to how much allies matter, especially for those who choose to stay. With the generous support of the Carpenter Foundation, Eshel's Welcoming Shuls project has surveyed over 200 Orthodox rabbis on specific questions of LGBTQ inclusion at play for them in their congregations. The program nourishes shul leadership to open doors incrementally and helps our members find welcoming shuls that best fit their needs. If you would like to add your shul to our growing list, or if you are LGBTQ and you need to know where you might find communal embrace, you can contact us at info@eshelonline.org. And as always, if you have a story of alliance to share, please contact me at allies@eshelonline.org.